Coming up on today's show,
the best thing you can do is to be kind to everyone, no matter if they're working the door, no matter if they, you know, it doesn't matter what job they're doing, or even if you think they're doing a job. Like, there is no one that's not important when it comes to these things.
Fill up your cup. Don't you dare break it.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location at the NAMM Show in Anaheim, California, my guests are a folk duo that put out a 10-song album that was released last May. They have been reviewed by Parade Magazine and performed on international stages, in addition to having earned first place at the 2023 Tucson Folk Festival Songwriting Contest and second place in the International Acoustic Music Awards, among other accolades. Amidst their rigorous tour schedule, the duo founded Portland's Folk Festival. Their top five songs on Spotify have gotten more than 1.3 million streams on that platform alone. You've been hearing the title track from last year's album, Long Time Honey. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Scott Gilmore and Sarah Vitort. Together, they are Fox and Bones.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having us.
So happy to be here.
Thank you both for taking time away from the NAMM Show to sit and talk with me today. Let's start off by having you talk first all about the song of yours that was just playing called Long Time Honey.
So Long Time Honey, as you mentioned, is the title track of the album that we released this year. And Long Time Honey came together in the studio as a way for us to kind of feel through the feelings of perseverance. It's kind of a recommitment to our craft. We've been a band together for 9 years, and we've done a lot of, you know, DIY touring, and we've done a lot of things ourselves through that 9 years. And I think Long Time Honey was really a, hey, we still love doing this. This is still worth doing. We might not be famous. We might never be famous. We're okay with that. But we feel like things are happening, and we're happy where we are, and we're going to keep at it.
I would like to say that Long Time Honey is definitely one of Sarah's powerhouse songs. She made very sure of that as we're in the studio. She's like, we're going to pitch this up two steps. I will be singing lead. And I followed her on that. And I think it was the right call.
Now, since I was talking over the song, help us through the title versus the message of the song. Connect those for us.
Yes. So the whole line is, I know it's been a long time, honey. It feels like we're getting there. And so it's kind of us talking to each other of like, hey, I know we've been doing this for a long time. We've been stuck in a car together for 9 years. We've been, you know, we know what it feels like to be poor. We know what it feels like to struggle, but it does feel like we're getting somewhere. And that, yeah, it's just a kind of uplifting message for ourselves.
So was Long Time Honey kind of, hey, we just wrote this song, we got to find a title for it? Or was that actually the original hook?
I believe that it's the original hook. Like, we went through a lot of edits, as we do with the songs. We kind of have to battle out the lyrics on a lot of them. And it felt like something that summarized what we were feeling. And it also felt like something that was new and individual. And as artists, you always try to find something that hasn't been done before, or a title that doesn't exist out there. Especially you look through the Spotify's and try to find something unique. It is tough with so much output that's coming through at this point. And so it felt like something that was new, original, and also stuck out a little bit.
There's a teaching moment, a potential teaching moment here. I'm someone who takes things very literal. So do you actually go to Spotify and type in Long Time Honey and say, let's make sure no one else has used that? Because in the podcast world, that is something that, because I've been at this for 11 years, I think it's common sense, but I find it's a mistake that a lot of podcasters make. They start up a show and they just come up with a title and they never look to see first. And it turns out there's 7 other podcasts that all have that same title. So was I taking you too literally, or did you really look on Spotify? Are there any songs called Long Time Honey?
You're spot on. We will give a look and see if there are other songs that have it. Now, it's an interesting balance because you don't necessarily want to completely obfuscate your art or obfuscate the things that you're creating to fit in or to make sure that there's a spot for it. But I definitely take a look and see, you know, what's out there. What if we're going to release something, is this something that's been done 40 times or is it just on there once or twice? And so we keep an eye on it.
Yeah, and that once or twice was, you know, 17 years ago by someone who's never released any music since then. So I think we're going to be okay. I have a limited time offer, and this is especially cool if you happen to like the number 11. This podcast turned 11 years old on February 17th, and so for 11 days, I'm offering $11 off the cost of my Media Interview Tips course. If you or someone you know are a musician, an actor, an author, an entrepreneur, an inventor, a filmmaker, a CEO, someone who gets interviewed, this online course will help you do better and get more results when you are interviewed as a guest on TV, radio, podcasts, and the like. There's even a module in there where I provide resources for how you can find more interview opportunities. This discount is just for a limited time, though, and yes, you can share it. Go to interviewtipscourse.com and then, to get the discount, use the coupon code 11YEARS. And that's no spaces and just the number, by the way. You're not spelling out 11. That reduced price will expire at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on February 28th. Again, interviewtipscourse.com, discount code 11YEARS.
There were 10 songs on the Long Time Honey album that came out last May. Tell us more about that release.
I would say it's a labor of love. We went into the studio. We would take our time with the songs. We didn't necessarily have a set release date, though we did have a little bit of pressure as our producer was having a child at the end of August. So we had a loose date where we had to finish the album by, and we just went in and decided to do it by feel and go with what, not to be too woo-woo, but go with what our heart was saying and write songs from our heart and try to express what we were feeling after these 9 years of working through the music industry, of exploring the space, of releasing songs, of having albums go well, of having shows go well, but also having, you know, sometimes I'm not. And so we wanted to write an album that both was hopefully triumphant and would express that we felt like we were starting to emerge in our industry, but also one that was looking back and appreciating all of the struggles that got us to the point that we're at now and appreciating that whole journey.
You made the statement before when you were talking about looking on Spotify of not wanting to do things that had been done before. Is there such a thing as just Fox and Bones going into the studio and starting to do something and go, oh, wait a minute, this sounds like our song from 6 years ago?
You know, I think that we had a lot of that going on before this album. And with this album, we hired a different producer than we've used in the past. And I think that alone really helped us break out of the norm of what we, you know, the types of chords we play and the lyrics that we write. Because previous to that, we used the same engineer and the same producer. And, you know, we had a couple albums that had a similar sound. And so I think that Long Time Honey is such a departure from that because we not only hired a producer, but somebody who is co-writing as well. And so he really had a lot of hands-on feedback for us. He was, you know, in there crafting these songs with us. And I think that that helped keep things fresh for us because I know that I for sure do that where I start to use the same chord progressions and I'm like, wait, this melody is almost the same as one I've done before. And I've heard major artists do that too. Mm. So it's a thing that we all kind of do.
Yeah, because you don't want to get painted with that brush. And as you implied, muscle memory takes over. And so maybe you're struggling and this is a fill that you realize, I did that on this song, and oh my gosh, I never realized I did it on that one too. So no, this would be the third time I got to come up with something. So I like, because I think the tendency is for the knee-jerk answer to be, I don't worry about writing something I've written before because we're all always evolving. It's like, yes, I'm not fighting you on that. However, you know better than I that all of a sudden you're in a write and you're going, oh, kind of struggling here.
I'd say I am hypercritical of things that I've done in the past to the point where I'll hear them in other songs. So I'll be like, oh, I remember when I did that in this certain record, and like pings me. And so I'm hyper attentive to those things and hoping that ways that you write a song in the past, you grow from it. And then the next time around, you find a different or more, at least more personally exciting way to create that. Because I think we all get bored quick when creating something. And so ideally you find we're evolving little bits at a time and finding new ways to express these ideas and also having new ideas to express as we grow.
Follow me with where I'm going on this. I go to a lot of songwriters festivals and I will hear a songwriter talk about a song of theirs that they wrote years and years ago. And they'll say, I don't even remember how it goes anymore, so unfortunately I can't play it. Or there'll be someone there that knows them and they'll ask for that song and they'll say, I haven't played that song in so long, I don't know how it goes anymore. Do you get to a point where, because I'm amazed at the level of recall to be writing a song and go, no, you know what, we actually did that on a song 7 years ago. That amazes me that you could remember something like a chord progression from a song that maybe you don't play regularly live. So just talk about that, because I think that's got to be a bigger challenge than maybe people realize.
Yeah, you know, that does happen to us all the time. Older stuff, we just were like literally no idea how to play it. But I think that music has this unique ability to trigger memory. And, you know, there's a lot of studies on this in music therapy and stuff. It's like they use music with people with dementia and Alzheimer's to recall memory. And they may not remember their name, but they know the words to this song. And so I feel like even though we couldn't get up on a stage right now and play all the songs from our first record, because there's chords and there's melody and lyrics that we all have to remember, and it's just too much. But when it comes to like those moments in the studio and something sounds like something else, I think it triggers like a neural pathway where you're like, wait, I heard this before. Okay. And so I think it's one of those things where your brain recalls it when you need it. But like, yeah, if someone was to put us on the spot and say, play You're So Easy from your first record, we'd be like, nope, I definitely know some of the words, but does Scott know the guitar part? Probably not.
Interesting.
I do not.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's my best answer for that.
You worked with esteemed songwriter, artist, producer Greg Holden on last year's album. How did you get that opportunity, and take us into all those sessions working with him and what that was like and what influence you felt he had on the project?
Yeah, so I really believe that we were meant to find Greg, because the way that we found him was so kismet and so niche. We were playing a house concert in the Bay Area in California with a longtime fan of ours who is...
Thank you for saying the Bay Area in California, because as someone that lives in Tampa Bay, when people say the Bay Area, I go, oh, I'm from there. And no, actually,
there's
I'm
lots of bays in the U.S.
Right?
So yes, the California Bay Area. And he's a super fan and, you know, has always taken such good care of us. And so we have this show at his house. And afterwards, you know, he's always got his finger on the pulse of like really good folk music. And he was like, have you guys heard of Greg Holden? And we were like, not by name. And then he mentioned some of the work that Greg has done. And we were like, okay, we definitely, you know, are familiar with that. And he was like, you know, I saw on his Instagram that he just moved to Portland, and he was a LA based before that. He's like, you guys should reach out to him and see if, you know, he said he might want to go on tour again. You should see if you could open for him. So that's kind of where it started.
Wow.
I went on his website, found an email for his management, and I was like, no way. If I'm just going to send this guy a cold email, there's no way I'm going to hear back from him. And within an hour, I got a response from Greg himself saying that he was not touring anymore, but he was living in Portland and producing records and looking for people to work with because he hadn't met anyone in the scene yet.
Wait a minute. Tell the audience how big my eyes got and my jaw like hit the floor when she said I got a response back in an hour. If this was a video podcast, at the bottom of the screen, it would say results not typical.
Exactly. Yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting it, which again, it's why like all of this feels so perfect. Like he just happened to be checking his email on that day. He got that email from us. He, you know, was looking for what we had to offer, which was the network in Portland. And we were looking for a new producer, even though that was not what we had asked him for. We were like, oh, this is a really great opportunity to work with an award-winning, you know, Billboard hit writing songwriter and producer, and definitely changed our sound.
Writing with Greg was both a joy but also very challenging in the best way, because Sarah and I, as a very strong-headed, stubborn duo, we are very committed to our ideas, and having Greg there as a third voice and someone to bounce our ideas off of and someone to choose which of us is right for the song was very helpful. And so we'd bring songwriting and ideas in, we bring lyrics in, and then really hash them out with Greg as we were creating the song. And so at the end of these 2-day, 3-day sessions, we'd have nearly a finished song with which we'd get to the results in a very I'd say, wholesome way, where, you know, we'd have to fight out our ideas, really, and stand up for our lyrical ideas. If there was a lyric that maybe Greg or Sarah didn't quite agree with, you'd have to really stand up for it to get it through. And you'd also have to learn how to let go at a certain point. You know, I definitely would stand up for a lot of my more whimsical, idealistic lyrics, and having Greg there got us to focus in on those things and find something that was a balance between what we wanted to say.
I'm confused. You brought the songs already finished to him, or maybe you just brought a couple, you were writing them all with him. What did that look like?
I think we brought one or two in, but the best songs, I think, came from when we started from scratch, and Greg would just start messing around on the guitar. Sarah and I would go and work on lyrics together, and then he'd start putting guitar down, and we'd bring the lyrics in, and he'd tell us to rewrite them all, and we would. And so organically, as a trio, I think that's where our best songs came from.
What about Long Time Honey? Was that one of the ones you brought in, or that was...
Long Time Honey was one from scratch. I'm trying to remember how far into this process it was, but it was definitely not one of the first ones. I'm having a hard time remembering how we started that one, but I definitely know we were playing around, and like Scott said, it was pitched down, because a lot of the time Scott will sing lead and I'll sing harmony. And I said, no, this is my song. And so we changed the pitch and we did the whole thing.
I got kicked out of the song.
Yeah. Well, you're still, we taught you to sing harmony on the song, which is something I've been wanting you to do. So I love your harmony part on that. Thanks for learning to sing it, Scott.
I'm hearing a lot of changes, positive, that came out of, but I want to back up, because there's a potential teaching moment for anyone in the audience who is an aspiring performer. Talk about quote unquote firing your previous producer. Was it, oh, we just never told him, we just did a record with someone else? Or did you go to him? Did you already know we're going to use someone else internally as a duo? Did you already decide whenever we do our next one, we're going to use someone else?
Well, actually, interestingly, our previous producer we did use on this record as well. Oh. So he's a really wonderful engineer, and he engineered some like live band studio things for two of the songs, Constellations and Don't Do Nothing. And what we found is we loved working with him, but he was really more of like he was great at engineering, and he was a little bit hands-off with production. He would say, whatever you guys want for the song, I'll do. And I don't think Scott and I had enough knowledge of studio and production to know what we wanted all the time. And so we just kind of said yes to everything. And then we were all trying to figure out how to make that work. And so we absolutely love our last engineer, and would speak highly of him to anyone. He has a wonderful studio in Portland called The Rye Room, and we'll use him for engineering whenever we need somebody for that. But I think he also knew that we were kind of moving in a different direction and wanting somebody who was a little bit more hands-on. I think it was, you know, net positive. I think he was not blindsided by that.
And Scott, from what you described, it sounds like there was a nice balance between, hey, this is really different, someone else telling me that I'm not really too crazy about that lyric, but also feeling so strongly about a lyric that you go, I know this is different, and I know it's for the best, and I know he's got some big accolades behind him, but I feel strongly, and I'm going to speak up on this one. Because when it was just the two of you, it's a tie. And you go, well, how are we going to break this tie? So now you got an odd number, and here's someone saying, I don't like that lyric, it doesn't work. And you go, I know he's got our best interest at heart, because he is a producer, but I love this lyric.
Yeah, I think I learned quite a bit as an only child. I had to learn how to share and how to listen to others, which is a wonderful thing to learn, a late in life thing to learn for me. But it was a great process. And to be honest, probably 99% of the time when that initial feeling was that lyric doesn't fit or that it wasn't for that song, Greg and Sarah were right. And so I think back to those lyrics that I was really, you know, stamping my feet over, and thinking back, I'm like, I'm glad they did that. I'm glad they stopped me from adding just, you know, extracurricular nonsense to the songs. Because it's songwriting so much about like what's like, you know, how do you express your feelings in a way that can be understood, I feel. And oftentimes I would tend to lean towards more wispy, metaphysically confusing lyrics. And so learning how to put lyrics into songs which actually expressed what I was trying to express, instead of just making them flowery and, you know, literally complex, was a great experience. Well, at the time, a horrible experience, but now looking at the completed project, it feels wonderful.
I think we're going to consider this the 11-year anniversary episode of this show, since it's coming out just 2 days after the actual February 17th anniversary. Interestingly, I am actually home in Tampa Bay following three trips that started the year. I actually will be grounded for a good while longer, with the next trip being to Chicago at the end of next month for Podcast Movement Evolutions. That starts on March 31st, and although it runs through April 3rd, I don't anticipate being there on that final day, since that's the first day of the three-day Las Vegas Writers Conference that I will be a speaker at. Visit LasVegasWritersConference.com if you're a writer of literature, books, not music, and want more information and registration details. I say all of this because I'm always eager to meet listeners in person, anywhere out there on the road where I'm traveling. If you are or will be in the Chicago area or Las Vegas, get in touch to let me know so we can meet, and I can say a personal thank you for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. And by the way, keep listening, keep reading the weekly e-newsletter, follow on TikTok and Instagram. There will be more travel to come, and I would love to meet you. Scott, Sarah, you're not resting on your laurels of last year's album release. Tell us about upcoming music, Ain't Giving Up Tonight.
We have a brand new single that is coming out March 14th called Ain't Giving Up Tonight. It is another collaboration with Greg Holden. I think it's one of my favorite songs that we've done so far. It has some ripping guitars in there, and it's a song that's basically about, you know, figuring out ways to show up in this industry without ruining your health, which I think for many artists it can be a tough one. It's a career that's full of late nights. It's a career that's full of a lot of time on the road and maybe bar food and loud noises in your voice and in your ears. And this is a song about how do you show up for that career and this job, but also not burn both candles at both ends.
Just like I said about Long Time Honey, how does the title Ain't Giving Up Tonight tie into that story that Scott just told?
Yeah, so the song kind of takes you through this, like, let's say it's a night of partying, for example, and it kind of starts with me singing about how, you know, I met up with a friend and she was telling me how she was in bed by 9, and I just couldn't relate to that, even though we're both in our late 30s. You know, she has a kid and she's, you know, going to bed early, and I'm still out on the road playing shows and, you know, sometimes drinking until 2 in the morning. And so that's kind of how the song starts, is this introspective, like, am I in the same place where my peers are? I feel like I'm not, because I chose such a different job. And then each chorus kind of goes through, you know, it's 2 a.m. here I am again having the time of my life. And then it's 4 a.m. in the second chorus. By the end, it's 6 a.m. and I'm watching the sunrise. Mm. Scott kind of has the second verse where he's, you know, talking about his early years of being a musician and partying and stuff in his teens. And essentially the whole song is just saying, maybe someday I'll give it up, but I'm not giving up tonight.
Okay.
And it can really refer to anything. You know, we kind of use like drinking as a reference in the song, but I think also it's just like this, the lifestyle of being on the road can be very taxing, and it's not for everybody. And we've realized that it really is for us. We do love it, even though we're in our late 30s. You know, we've had to find ways to make it healthier and, you know, get that sleep when we can and really nourish our bodies and stuff on the road. But I think at the end of the day, we both thrive with this type of lifestyle. And I think we've both questioned that at times, watching what our friends are all doing.
Okay, for those of you that came to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because you're fans, you're followers of Fox and Bones, thank you first and foremost. And please listen to some other episodes of the show. But you already know, Scott and Sarah, those of you who are listening to this episode because you're loyal listeners of mine, thank you ever so much. Thank you ever so much. And thank you ever so much. However, I'm here to say that you said twice in my late 30s, and I thought I had you pegged like late 20s. So if you don't know Fox and Bones, go look. And I'm going to be giving, of course, as I always do, their plugs where you can go see them online, because you're going to agree with me that Sarah looks like there's no way she could possibly be in her late 30s.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Scott, I want to get back to, you said the date that is coming out next month. Well, is there a right answer to the following question? You put out the album last May. I don't know when this song was written, Ain't Giving Up Tonight. Is there a certain amount of time where you go, all right, as much as we still want people to go to last year's album, we got to put something new out? Or are you going to tell me, Bruce, we were going to put this song on the album last year. We just had to find the time to eventually get it out there because we love it so much. Walk me through the mindset, how do you rationalize the release time? And for that matter, when was the song written?
Yeah, I think as far as a standard release cycle, by the time you put out a record...
Hold on, late 30s? No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
By the time you put out a record of songs, you've listened to them and tweaked them and worked on them so much that as the artist, you're usually sick of them. And so right about the time the record comes out, like my mind immediately kind of jumps to, okay, what are we writing next? Mm. And so I think we had a couple months. We had maybe half a year or so of working hard and touring the record and trying to figure out how to get the songs out to as many hands as possible. And I'd say maybe around November, October is when we just on a whim went into the studio. I think we were going to record something completely different, but the song came to us so naturally with Greg at the helm that we figured, why not start this next album, start the next process?
Who had the idea for the song, one of you or him?
I think that Sarah did most of the writing and I had the Ain't Giving Up Tonight hook. And so I think I had that hook and then Sarah really led the charge with most of the lyrical writing.
Yeah, I think this song kind of, you know, because one of the ways we work with Greg is we come and we're like, okay, we're starting from scratch. We've got nothing. And so we talk about some references, like reference tracks, and we talk about some themes that might work. So for this song, I'm not sure if I can remember the exact reference tracks we had, but I know that we wanted something that felt celebratory, that felt kind of, you know, a little bit rock and roll. And I think that vibe that we were going for kind of led into the lyrics. And I feel like we might have struggled a little bit because I think we had a couple different like hook type things that we were working on. And I feel like this one, we went back to the drawing board a lot to figure out what is it we're exactly trying to say, because we know we want this to be kind of like an anthemic party song or, you know, whatever. But it's like, okay, let's make it a little bit more introspective, but not too introspective that we're like losing people and the fun of it. And so I remember it being a little bit of a back and forth to figure out exactly what we wanted to say with it.
Now, the song is coming out next month. I think spring officially begins March 20th, I want to say. Spring U.S. tour for Fox and Bones. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we are going all over the United States, booked by our agent, Regine, at Black Oak Artist. And it's going to send us from Treefort in Boise, Idaho, to Tucson Folk Festival in Tucson, Arizona, all the way eastbound to the eastern coast and then back around through Texas and Tennessee. And we're going to be hitting, it's got to be close to 30, 35 venues over a couple months.
Wow.
And we're just going to be out there. So if you live anywhere in the United States, we're coming to you.
Is that about typical for Fox and Bones, or is it this is a lot of touring in a short amount of time for us? This is kind of stretching our limits of what we've patterned ourselves in the past.
We have always been road dogs. We do better mentally, not always physically, but mentally on the road for long stretches of time. And we find that the career works the best for us when we play as many shows as we can. And so this is probably about average of being out maybe 2.5 months, 3 months. Mm. That seems to work the best for us mentally.
Okay.
You know, I think when we first started this back in 2016, we kind of told ourselves, you know, we're going to throw everything at the wall, say yes to everything, play absolutely everywhere, and do it all year long. And for years, we kind of bounced around. We didn't really have a house sometimes. We would just like go from house to house of people that would host us along the road. And I think when in 2020, when the pandemic hit and kind of forced us to cancel a 4-month tour and forced us to sit on our laurels for a second, we realized we're like, okay, we really miss touring. We can't wait to get back out there. But going out for 4 months at a time was crazy. Like, we got to streamline this and we got to have more time at home. And so post 2020, we've really focused on having about 2.5 months be the max and going on, you know, shorter runs, like a week here, a couple weeks there. We usually do 6 weeks in the fall. And I think that that has helped us have a real balance, because then we can come home and center and ground and, you know, be creative. It's really hard to be creative when you're on the road because you're working all the time. And so it gave us the chance to balance those things out. And so now, you know, this 2 to 2.5 month spring tour feels like the right middle ground for us.
But you said in there, and everything that you just said, we said yes to everything. There's a huge, huge, huge lesson that performers have to learn, which is figuring out when they're at the point in their career where you can't keep saying yes to, we can't pay you, but you're going to get some good exposure. We can't pay you, but at least we'll let you sell your merch. We can't pay you, but it's like someone should write a song called We Can't Pay You. And the two of you probably know that song metaphorically so well. Was there something that happened for Fox and Bones to say, not so much, Sarah, what you just said, we can't keep saying yes to everything, we have to be more conscious. I'm asking, was there something that happened that made you, as a business, say, we can't keep saying yes to everything because these people that don't want to pay us anything, it's too much on our bodies, it's too much on our vehicle, it's too much on whatever to go and do these shows that we did them enough times and we know that you don't get the return on investment.
Yeah, I think the experience of that has taught us a lot in the way that we've found that we want to be in an atmosphere where people appreciate us and that we appreciate them. And so we try to look at a show and is there going to be monetary compensation or is it going to be soul filling? Is it going to fill us up and keep our soul gas tank full or our literal gas tank full? And ideally it does both, but as long as it checks one of those boxes, then usually it's a go. And the good thing is that we've played enough all around the US and Europe that we now have done the research to find those places that'll anchor dates that'll really either make sure we can keep playing monetarily or we'll make sure that we're satisfied and feel good about the career that we've chosen all across the US. And so having those dates, then we can fill those in, and so then we can take risks on other spots that we can do some exploratory playing and figure that out as we go.
But let me ask you this though. Now we're going to come back around to the fact that you are a duo, meaning an even number. I don't know which one of you handles the booking, but if an inbound request says, we'd love to have the two of you come and perform at XYZ, and one of you says, oh my gosh, we got to do this, this sounds amazing, and the other one says, no, we're not doing that, how do you ultimately resolve those? I don't know if y'all are a couple, by the way, and maybe it doesn't matter, but for the good of the band at least, right, never mind personal relationships, but because you don't have Greg, right, you don't have a third band member to say, do you want to do this gig or not? Because I think we do, and this one thinks we shouldn't.
You know, we do run into this a lot because Scott and I, we do have differing opinions, and I think that we sometimes will talk it out a lot. And generally, you know, we'll usually come to a consensus, and I think we always go back to the two things Scott just said. Is it soul-filling, or is it pocketbook-filling, or in some cases, is it the right, exact right type of exposure? For example, when we played the Tucson Folk Festival a couple years ago, we had entered as a songwriting, into the songwriting contest, mm-hmm. and you know, we didn't necessarily get paid to show up and play our song to compete in the songwriting contest, but it was worth it to go down there because it was we were playing in front of a massive audience, and it gave us the chance to have a future with that festival, which now, you know, even if we hadn't won, we won, which was great, but even getting into the top 10 of that songwriting contest pretty much guarantees you a spot for life at that festival if you want it. And we have a wonderful group of fans in Tucson who always come to see us, and they buy a lot of merch. Wow. And so it's trying to figure out, like, is this the type of exposure that can bring us something else? Is this a networking opportunity or a contact we want to make that can go into the future? And I think that if Scott and I talk it through enough, we usually can come to a consensus about that, because a lot of times we might disagree initially and then
sleep on it, come back to it a day or two or three later. And
exactly. Or we'll find out new information, or not, you know, now we do have an agent that we can kind of bounce things off of. And the three of us really, you know, she hasn't just like taken our career and run with it. She's really kept us in the loop. And the three of us are really co-creating this together, which is nice because Scott and I have been hands-on our whole career. And so being able to still be involved in that process with her, we're now a team of three and we can kind of make those decisions.
Speaking of live music, I mentioned this in the intro, but I'd love to hear more about the two of you creating and hosting Portland's Folk Festival.
Yeah, Portland's Folk Festival started in 2018 as a way to get all of our friends in one room. If you have a lot of musician friends, they're always gone, like little ducklings off playing or booked somewhere. And so, like, how do we get these people in one room? It's like, well, book them. And so it started at McMinniman's White Eagle, which is about 125 cap, and sold out. And it's like, we got something here. Let's keep doing this every year. We upgraded to McMinniman's Mission Theater the next year, which is a 300 cap. And then after that, they tossed us right on up to the big time at the Crystal Ballroom, which is about 1,500 capacity. And we've been building it at that venue ever since.
I'm amazed myself that there seem to be folk festivals everywhere and that there wasn't one until the two of you started it only in 2018.
Now, I think there's been a long history of folk festivals in Portland. I saw some pictures of the original one in, I think, 1962 that was hosted there. And I believe there was one maybe earlier in the decade or earlier in Portland. But there, when we started hosting it, there wasn't one in town. And it kind of picked up real quickly. And I think McMinniman's as an organization in Oregon has been so helpful in guiding us and trusting that we're going to do our best to curate a lineup of artists that are thoughtful and entertaining and also very kind and compassionate. And with those tenets, we've been able to build it and maintain it. And it really is something that starts our year off right, because it starts every January. And so right after New Year's, it's time to sink in and lock in and make sure that we're physically and emotionally present for the building of the event.
So it just took place?
Just took place.
Ah, okay. Okay. Over how many days is it held?
This time, we've done 2 days. We had 35 artists on two stages. We've had 3 days before, but that starts to get a little mentally taxing. And so we're exploring different ways to bring the festival to life.
Do the two of you feel that you need to be stewards of folk music, in the sense that I have noticed, as I'm sure the two of you have, that Americana has become so widely defined in the year 2025 that we can tell 10 people here at the NAMM show Americana, and they can have 10 different interpretations of what that sounds like. But do the two of you feel like we have a responsibility to keep the folk festival to what everybody expects folk music to sound like? Or do you feel that, no, that too is a genre that's grown enough over the years that people are going to show us some grace if they come and see a performer and go, well, wasn't really what I was expecting, but don't hate it?
I feel pulled in both directions. I think that folk as an art form is a little bit more about the message that you're saying and less about the instrumentation. But with that said, I do want to honor where it came from. And so we have a stage that's dedicated distinctly to acoustic music that's very stripped down. It's singer-songwriter. It's a person and an acoustic guitar, or a person and a piano, and it's just the song. And then we have the big band stage where that kind of has more of a reach, where you can really explore different genres of it, because I don't want to limit it at all or exclude any sort of expression from the folk umbrella. But I do also want to cherish what it came from while also looking forward to what it can be.
Interesting. I like that. I am joined today on location at the NAMM show in Anaheim, California by Scott Gilmore and Sarah Vitort. They are the folk duo Fox and Bones. Visit their official website at foxandbones.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard them talking about their Longtime Honey release from last year. In the store section of their website, you can order a physical copy of it, CD or limited edition cream vinyl. Their music is available digitally, of course, Apple Music, Pandora, Spotify, Bandcamp, and even SoundCloud, which is one of the many platforms that this show is available on. On the homepage of their website, you will also see logos, links for social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. And as you heard Scott saying, they have a very, very robust spring tour. So follow them online to keep up with dates and locations for where and when you can go see them perform live. Since Scott and Sarah talked about the folk festival that they host, I want to repeat something that I mentioned last week, since I rarely talk about it on this show. If you or someone you know is interested in having me come be a part of your event, I strongly recommend you or they visit speakerbrucew.com. It's an entire website devoted to all the speaking that I do. There's a video on there, a list of locations and events I've spoken at, and more, plus, of course, an opportunity to contact me. I have done workshops at songwriters festivals. I have spoken at podcasting conferences. I've been a speaker at conferences for authors and more. Again, check out speakerbrucew.com. Scott, Sarah, you told us about the Spring U.S. Tour, and people hear that and just think it sounds so glamorous. Share with us the good, the bad, and the ugly about life on the road.
Yeah, you know, we have done this ourselves since the beginning. And so when it first started, we were just traveling around in my Volvo sedan, which was crazy. All our gear, all of our clothes, and Scott and I squished into a sedan. Now, we have upgraded to an SUV, which is really nice. But I think that space is something that is a luxury on tour, and that, you know, we're like crammed into the same hotel room, or crammed into onto somebody's couch, or crammed into the same car. And so I think one thing that Scott and I have learned is to take our space in the ways that we can. For me, I really like to like go on a walk and like explore the city before a show. And Scott really likes to kind of get some work done, find a coffee shop, hunker down. I think that finding ways to keep our like mental and physical health up and like do things separately is a really nice thing. And yeah, I think that what I love about touring is the lifestyle of being in a new place every day. Mm. I like meeting new people. I like seeing new places. I like seeing the sights, trying new restaurants, trying new coffee shops, finding the best of what like this little town has to offer. And then we move on to the next one the next day. That just brings me a type of joy that, you know, I think is inherent to my being that I've always sought out. And so
for
I
the
really
audience,
love that.
Excuse me for interrupting. I want the audience to understand that when you're on stage performing, you're also working in the sense that you do find someplace new and you go, I like this venue. This is really cool. But now we have to impress the booker because we'd love to come back and play here again. So as much as you're trying to entertain the audience and remember the lyrics and do all the things,
oh yeah,
in the back of your head, you're going, I hope that he or she is noticing how good we are and what a good reception we're getting from the audience so that we can stand a chance of coming back here another time.
You know, and I think that makes a really good point that I would love to say to those out there who are looking to do this career.
Please.
Or looking to tour, is that the best thing you can do is to be kind to everyone, no matter if they're working the door, no matter if they, you know, it doesn't matter what job they're doing, or even if you think they're doing a job. Like, there is no one that's not important when it comes to these things. And Scott especially is really good at like really remembering people's names and thanking them on stage. And my ability for names is not as good, but we always thank our sound guy. We always thank our door guy. You know, we always say tip your bartenders. And I think those are the things, just as much as you being good at your music and having good music, I think being enjoyable to work with is almost more important sometimes than putting on a good show. And we know we'll put on a good show. We're confident in what we bring to the table. But I think a lot of what we bring to the table is showing up, being kind, being easy to work with, and just, you know, being gracious and appreciative of being there. And so that's, if there's anything that I can impart on people going on tour early on, is, you know, never act like you're too good for anything, because everyone matters, and everyone matters in making your show a good show.
Do one or both of you practice vocal rest on the day of a show? Because if it's Sarah, then I am wondering if people would go, well, he was really nice, but she just like wasn't talking at all. It's like, oh, she's on vocal rest. That's all it is.
Yeah, I keep telling Sarah to do more vocal rest, even when we don't have a show. We will sometimes have some vocal rest. I kind of sing like I have a bag of rocks in my mouth, and so I don't need to rest it a whole lot. I just kind of gravel through it. Sarah will rest vocals sometimes. One thing, though, about being on the road, I think it's about 10% performance and 90% transportation or sleeping. And so the glamour part of it is such a small sliver of it, and the rest of it's just getting from one place to the next. It's an organized chaos that I like a lot. It's simplified in a lot of ways.
It's also a lot of carrying things.
Yeah, you get your workouts in. It's something that I do, does put my mind at rest, because it's simple. You just got to get to the place, drive to the place. And that's something that helps me mentally.
Except, I mentioned back in the intro that you've played on international stages. Specifically, tell us about touring in Europe.
Europe adds a level of difficulty to touring, but it also adds a level of intrigue, I would say. It's getting to see a country that is as old as these European countries, and these towns and these cobblestones adds a lot of, I don't know, how do you even say it?
Yeah, it adds a flavor to it for sure. And I think European audiences are really appreciative of American bands coming over. I think they just assume like, oh, you came all the way from America, you must be good. And so we kind of start from a really good place. I think the language barrier is sometimes the hardest thing, because we're already, you know, talking to people a lot after shows and stuff. But in Germany, for example, you know, people are talking to us in English, but with a pretty heavy accent. So we're really having to pay attention to what's being said and speak clearly and speak slowly. In fact, there was one tour that we came back from. We'd been out on the road in Europe for like 6 weeks, and we came, had a homecoming show, and all of our friends were there. And afterwards they were like, why was Scott talking like we were idiots? Because he was speaking so slowly. We got in the habit of on stage slowing it down and enunciating our words. And they were like, why is Scott like, does Scott think we're dumb? And the answer is yes. And also, he still loves you. But you know, European travel, all of our funniest tour stories and silliest tour mishaps have happened in Europe, because you know, when you're in the US and you kind of know what to expect, and you know where you're going, and in Europe, anything that could just be a minor thing turns into a major thing, either because you don't know the language, or you don't know what the speed limit is, or you don't know where to get things fixed on your car, or, you know, all of the above. And so I think that some of our best stories have happened in Europe.
But, you know, I was about to say, there's probably a warning that you'd love to issue to the up-and-comers, which is Europe probably sounds like a fun thing to go and do, but be careful because you could lose your shirt if you don't know what you're doing over there. But I would imagine that you could get caught up in that domestically and just say, oh, they're going on this great spring tour where they're playing all these cities. Let's just do that this year in 2025. Let's just go nuts and tour all over the United States. Be careful because you could lose your shirt in the United States if you do it and you haven't been at it for 9 years and are just winging it.
You can lose your shirt anywhere, but you could also find yourself along the way.
Thank you so much for that nugget of wisdom, Scott. Yes, it is inherently more expensive to tour in Europe because you have to get yourself there and then you have to rent vehicles and sometimes rent gear and all of that. So we definitely recommend trying it out in the United States first. But we actually, our first real tour was in Europe. We didn't tour the U.S. at all before we were asked to come to Europe. And so we kind of got thrown right into the deep end with that.
Wow. And audience, here's an interesting little piece of Now Hear This entertainment trivia. More than a year ago, episode 504 from October 2023, my guest was ZZ Ward, who Fox and Bones have been on the same bill with.
Yes, we opened for ZZ Ward at Revolution Hall in Portland in February of 2020. And so we were having such a wonderful experience. We had just had our folk festival and 2020 was off with a bang. And we got asked to open for ZZ Ward on her Portland show. And we had a wonderful show. We played as a trio with our guitarist, Matt Salinas, and we had a merch line around the corner and it just felt amazing. And that was a couple months before things shut down. And so, but we very much still appreciate having been added to that bill. And I think that's still one of our favorite opening shows that we've done.
Nice. Maybe it's because we're here at the NAMM show, which is always a good time being surrounded by 100,000 close friends. I do have to ask, what are some of your favorite perks of being a musician?
You know, I think I really like and this doesn't happen the whole way up, but having a free meal is pretty nice. You know, I think that being able to drink and eat for free at venues does help you save money, and that really does go a long way. And again, I think one of the big perks for me is getting to be in a new place all the time, getting to explore, getting to travel while also making money.
I love being able to and getting the excuse to go and see friends and family all across the world, being in a town for a night and getting to create and continue and elongate relationships that you've had with people from since your childhood is a lovely perk. And I have friendships that have stayed relevant because we get a chance to see them every year when we come through town. And then also parents, like I've seen our parents or my parents on tour. And it really does make it feel like you have, the world's so small.
I started into that question by referencing the fact that we're at the NAMM show. The two of you will be performing tonight. And more importantly, this is your first ever NAMM show.
It's our first ever NAMM show, and we're only here for the day. So we've had to squeeze a lot into a day here at NAMM. But, you know, we got to do some content with Breedlove Guitars, who is an Oregon-based guitar company that has worked with our festival before and that has, you know, had us be an artist in the past. And so we got to play for them today, and we met some lovely people at Sennheiser, and we're working with Dark Matter Audio. We got our custom in-ears finally done. And so we've had a very productive day here at NAMM, even though it's only the one day.
Wow. It sure sounds like it. That's fantastic. I wonder if you're at liberty to say this or not, but I'll ask anyway. Do you have some favorite cities to play in? Nobody ever likes to play favorites with their kids, with their whatever, but...
We definitely have a couple. I think Boise, Idaho has become a really great hotspot for us. I think that Appleton, Wisconsin is great. We did a festival a couple years ago called Mile of Music, which is 250 bands in a mile radius in Appleton, Wisconsin. And when you go there, people treat you like you're famous, and it's really amazing. And so now when we go back to Appleton, we have a diehard cohort of fans from there. The Tucson Folk Festival, we have a lot of fans in Tucson, and the people at the festival that run that festival are just the most wonderful people that, you know, we have a really wonderful relationship with. So those are a few of my favorites.
I'd like to think oftentimes it's the small towns, the small and assuming towns, where there's one bar, but it's the bar that everyone shows up to at night. That's some of my favorites because it's unexpected, and they usually show up and really rage out.
The two of you have done a great job of painting a really good picture of this crazy, kooky, nutty lifestyle that is being a professional recording and touring act, and I see a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of love for what you do. At the same time, there's been things that we've talked about throughout our conversation today that begs the question, what keeps you going? Because I think it is easy after 9 years to say, man, the road has really gotten to me, or I am fresh out of ideas, and I've been fresh out of ideas for too long now. So what keeps the two of you going?
Lack of alternatives. I do often feel that I don't know what else I'd do too. Like, this is something that I know that I love to do, that I am excited to do, that I am overjoyed to be able to go on the road, to be able to write music, to be able to see friends and family all across the country. And so for me, I think it really is. I couldn't imagine my life any other way.
And I think for me, it's lately for me, it's been a combination of appreciating that no matter where we're at in our career, we are getting to do this and we are getting to have fun. I think in the past, I've gotten really stuck in this comparison state of like, well, so-and-so is doing this and playing at these level venues and selling this many tickets. And that is something that has made me feel like quitting in the past. And so now kind of my focus has been on what are we doing that I love and what milestones are we hitting, and like trying to block out what other people are doing. And then in addition to that, for me, one of the biggest things is like, I'm really excited to grow and keep expanding this. Like, for example, right now, my next pet project has been to like really up level the way we look on stage. You know, we've always dressed a certain way, but especially when we have the full band, I've had a harder time pulling teeth to get people to wear what I want them to. And now I'm kind of like creating themes around our shows. And this is something I'm just starting to do, but it's giving me so much creative excitement and inspiration. And so, you know, there's one thing in just like being excited to write new songs, but I feel like for me, it's like the crafting of our brand, our persona, our stage presence, our stage show, to create something that people will not forget, not just because they like the music, but because of what they experienced visually, sonically, with the other people in the room. And so I think for me, part of what keeps me going is the promise of how we can change and evolve and grow. And, you know, we're not the type to stay the same forever and stay static forever. And so I think knowing that it's always growing and changing is part of what keeps us doing it, because it's exciting and it's fun and it's challenging all the time.
I love that you talked about appearance on stage, because I think that's something that gets overlooked far, far, far too often. I think people just grab something out of their closet, they go play the gig, and I'm all about image. And so I love that you said that, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Because you said, when we have our band.
Yes.
So if it's just the two of you, is it, okay, you caught me, Bruce, because audience, please go to their website. Please go to their social media. I wish that this was a video podcast so you could see the way that Sarah is appearing right now. But no, I'm saying this because I admire that you are conscious of this and that you are trying to be thoughtful about appearance on stage. And so is it when it's just Scott and I, we just do whatever, or is it, no, I'm up leveling to where even the two of us now, you know, I'm always going to wear this and I want him to kind of that. Just
yeah.
Walk us through that. Because like I said, I think this is very important. I wish it wouldn't have come at the end. I hope people out there listen to all the entire episode from start to finish and you don't say, well, I'm at work, so I'm going to press pause and I'm going to listen to the second half of the episode and then you never come back to it. Because this is a huge lesson that I've noticed this for too long now, that there just seems to be very little thought. It's the exception to the rule when someone does put thought into, what are we going to do appearance-wise on stage?
Yes. I think it's something that Scott and I have worked on over many years. I mean, there's pictures of us on our first tour where like I'm in a flannel and, you know, Scott's in a t-shirt. And so it hasn't always been, although Fox and Bones kind of started because I was wearing like clip-in fox ears. So I've always dressed a little crazy, but I've really honed in on what my style is. And through that, Scott and I have kind of been able to figure out like what style that he feels comfortable in will also complement what I'm doing. And so we've kind of figured that out with him as, you know, kind of this Western wear and the hats and the, you know, he's got a couple 3-piece suits and we keep evolving what he feels comfortable and wants to wear, because I don't think he's quite as exhibitionist as I am. So we've kind of had to, you know, work together on what works for both of us. But yes, I'm pretty much always dressed up in some way or another on stage. And we're getting better about Scott and I coordinating at least a color, what we're wearing. Cause it used to be kind of like, Scott, you wear what you feel, I wear what I feel. And, you know, slowly we're just trying to at least coordinate between what he likes and feels comfortable in and what crazy thing I'm going to wear. So today we have a jean theme. Our bassist also has a jean shirt and jeans on. So we're all blue and jeans.
I didn't notice that you have. Okay. And again, shame on me. I'm one of those people that's still doing an audio only podcast. But Scott, how does all this make you feel? Because there is the male-female dynamic where I love all the flair. I love you saying, just so you know, I'm going to wear the, like, sparkly tights that it seems like a lot of girls are wearing these days. And you're going, okay, I hope you're comfortable. I don't know what you're looking for me to say.
Yeah, I think this falls into the category of things that I've been learning to take guidance on, where Sarah has ideas and I go with them and trust that she's got a vision for it, and she's usually right. And so I'm happy to defer to her on outfit things. And we've got a good closet of set of things that I feel comfortable wearing that are directed by Sarah's fashion eye.
But that's an excellent point that you made, though, is to have the mindset that she's doing it for the good of the band. She's doing it for the good of the duo. She's not just doing it whimsically. She's giving thought to what more can we do. I love the word that you used, to up-level Fox and Bones. You started to go there. Somebody please, Fox and Bones, where does that name come from?
When we first met, Sarah had the fox ears on, and we just wanted to create kind of like a Bonnie and Clyde group, where the first album is a concept album where we went out and, you know, robbed banks and had a life on the road. And so we wanted to create a life that we can then go out and live, maybe sans the bank robbery. And so Fox and Bones were the two characters that came out of that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We like to joke because on our new record, there's a song called Tricks, and we wrote Tricks about the night we met, which basically the way that Scott and I met, very common question, is that I was playing a solo show at a place called Crush Bar in Portland, and Scott had been online, you know, I wouldn't say stalking, but he was definitely aware of who I was online. He had been checking out some photos. He had decided he wanted to meet me and work together. Anyway, the moment that I met him, I had come back from the bathroom. He was sitting in my seat where I'd left all my stuff. And I said, excuse me, I was sitting there. And he said, it's okay, I was just leaving. I only came over here to steal some stuff out of your bag. And so we wrote Tricks about the night that we met because it was so silly. And one of the first lines is, I told Bones I'm going to get that girl, because Scott had come to that show with his best friend, Alex, whose nickname is Bones.
There we go.
And so it's kind of funny because Scott technically isn't Bones, and yet he is. And when people ask for the name, we were like, well, how do we explain that this is our, it's just like a weird name
it's
to explain.
It's a good story though. And when you have a unique name like that, you better have a good story to go with it, because if it's lame, people are going to go, that's it. It
like,
doesn't
what?
Make sense. Like, yeah, whatever. You've got a very deceptive persona, because you've got a really good sense of humor that I've picked up on, and I admire that. So
thank you.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, and we're going to close with another Fox and Bones original song, one called House by the River. Before I let you go and we play that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Yeah, Sarah and I have a dream of owning some land, of owning a property, and ideally somewhere close to a body of water. And the song is an ode to manifesting it, to figuring out how we can make that a reality, to the point where we go all around the country and people will tell us about their houses by the river that they've recently bought. And we ask if we can stay there in their backyard for extended periods of time. We're hoping to make this true.
Yeah, and I think, you know, something interesting to mention about House by the River, too, is that this is the first song that we wrote with Greg as a collaboration. And so this was the one that kind of started it all. And we went into the studio with Greg, and he started playing the opening riff to the song, and he was playing it over and over again. And we were, you know, Scott and I were a little nervous. We hadn't co-written with anyone before, and we were, you know, stalling, basically. And he was like, I'm going to keep playing this riff until you guys agree to make it part of the song. And so the riff is what started it. And I remember we just kind of had this melody, but no words. And I remember just saying, take me down to the house by the river. And it all was built around that. And it ends up being so perfect because Scott and I have always used music as a tool for manifestation. We've always written about things we want to happen to us. In addition to explaining our experiences, but we always have tried to use language that is like, what are we manifesting? What are we moving towards? And so this song, we're like, yeah, if we sing this every night, it's like a mantra.
Let's
it's like a prayer.
Speak it into existence.
Speaking it into existence. And
wow.
So, you know, it's us looking back on many years on the road being like, it would be nice to have a place that's our own.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Please come and perform in Florida, Tampa, Orlando, somewhere around there. Let's make that happen.
We would love that.
Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Really enjoy the conversation and can't wait to see what else is coming from Fox and Bones. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to Scott Gilmore and Sarah Vitort. They are the folk duo Fox and Bones. Do visit their official website at foxandbones.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Once you're there, remember to go into the store section to order a physical copy CD or limited edition cream vinyl of their Longtime Honey album that came out last year. Their music is available digitally as well. Apple Music, Pandora, Spotify, Bandcamp, and even SoundCloud, which, as I mentioned before, is one of the many platforms that this show is available on. On the homepage of their website, you will see logos, links for social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. I have followed them. I know they would appreciate you doing the same. For that matter, tell them that you heard them and their music on Now Hear This Entertainment. And, of course, the spring tour. Keep up with Fox and Bones online for details on where and when you can go see them perform live. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you're still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you'd like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen week after week, year after year, 11 years now with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you'll spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It's simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. And that's going to do it for episode 575. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Fox and Bones. This is the one they just talked about. It's called House by the River.
I'm ready for my hands to get down.